Following are comments on William Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice, Act II. Mislike me not for my complexion. Morocco arrives at Belmont and makes a spirited case for himself as suitor. Portia responds politely but not positively. In Act II, Scene 1, Morocco joins Aaron from Titus Andronicus as one of Shakespeare's quote-unquote Moorish characters, as will Othello in subsequent years. Morocco has none of the gravity of the other two. He's a comic figure and cultural outsider who isn't in a position to get the joke behind Portia's polite dismissal. His exuberant, "Mislike me not for my complexion," nets him only Portia's agreement that the prince stands, quote-unquote, "as fair as any comer I have looked on yet." Act 2, Scene 1, Line 1, and Lines 20 through 21. Of course, we have already become acquainted with the wretched suitors who have so far made their way to Belmont. This scene is treated comically, but it's also bound to feel uncomfortable for modern audiences. Portia's polite-sounding dismissal is clearly, at least in part, grounded in disapproval of Morocco's race. Here, she wields the descriptor fair as a weapon, not as a compliment. There's also the unspoken probability that Morocco is Muslim. "You have the grace of God, sir, and he hath enough." Shylock's servant, Lancelot, a Christian, decides to abandon his Jewish master and seek employment in Bassanio's household. His suit is successful, and then Bassanio readies himself for the evening's entertainment, and soon for his trip to Belmont. In Act 2, Scene 2, Shylock's Christian servant, Lancelot, accepts the quote-unquote fiend's counsel to abandon his master's employ, running against his own conscience. Act 2, Scene 2, Line 24. "Should we, then, accept abandonment of Shylock as something easy to do?" This servant delivers us his internal dialogue, comically shuttling back and forth between a good angel who counsels him to stay and a bad angel who tells him it's time to quit. Lancelot sees Shylock as a stock figure, quote-unquote, a kind of devil. Act 2, Scene 2, Line 20. Consider the conversation between Lancelot and his father, which alludes to the biblical story about the younger son Jacob tricking Father Isaac into giving him his blessing as the firstborn son, instead of giving it to his eldest son Esau. Quote-unquote, "Give me your blessing," asks Lancelot toward the end of his talk with a half-blind father who doesn't recognize him, thereby casting himself in the role of Jacob in his striving to move onward and upward in life. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 69 through 70. Typologically, this biblical story has been read as indicating the rightness of choosing the Christian master, Christ, over the Jewish master, the old religion. Lancelot's father, Gobbo, has brought a present for Shylock, but Lancelot wants the present to go to Bassanio, not to the Jew he's abandoning. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 97 through 98. In Lancelot's quest, the comic spirit overcomes all, accomplishing something like, quote-unquote, grace, which Lancelot attributes to Bassanio. Quote-unquote, "You have the grace of God, sir, and he hath enough." Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 135 through 136. Bassanio cheerfully accepts Lancelot's linguistically inept suit to become his servant. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 137 through 140. We see that the process of abandoning Shylock begins right after the bargain of flesh has been struck. First, Lancelot decides to flee and finds an easy welcome with Bassanio. And then, in the next scene, Jessica will make her choice too, which, like Lancelot's, will be met with enthusiastic Christian acceptance. It's hard to avoid the notion that the text normalizes, even ratifies, this abandonment of Shylock. Within the play's Christian framework, The qualities that bind people together are generosity and love. But Shylock appears to reject this imperative. In The Merchant of Venice, abandoning this Jewish moneylender seems to be cast as the natural result of this refusal. Within the play's framework, Lancelot's abandonment of Shylock is preparation for the far more serious and injurious, but apparently entirely licit, abandonment of him by other Christian characters. We should recall here that one key function of ideology, as sociologists often define that concept, is to make people's life conditions and arrangements seem natural and immutable rather than the product of human institutions and imperatives. One day, many of the Enlightenment's leading intellectual lights would robustly expose this operation, though they hardly succeeded in eliminating it. Today, human beings still live by ideologies that treat problems like poverty, crime, and hunger as merely natural or owing to human nature, and therefore to be endured. There is some irony in Lancelot's decision, since there is no evidence in the text for any claim that Shylock has abused or cozened his servant. He is dour at times, but not at all abusive towards his rather silly, word-mangling Christian helper. Lancelot himself seems to feel a bit guilty in leaving Shylock, if only for a moment. In any event, Bassanio finalizes his plans to attend a masque and dinner in Venice. Graziano asks to attend him during his upcoming trip to Belmont, and is told to tone down his brash attitude, at least after the festivities. At Belmont, he had better be on his best behavior. Alack, what heinous sin is it in me to be ashamed to be my father's child? Jessica feels anguish at her desire to abandon Shylock, but firmly plans to do so. In Act 2, Scene 3, Shylock's daughter Jessica is torn about what she is about to do, exclaiming, quote-unquote, "Alack, what heinous sin is it in me to be ashamed to be my father's child?" Act 2, Scene 3, lines 15 through 16. Still, she gives Lancelot a ducat, a substantial gift for a man of his station, and makes him carry a letter to Lorenzo, sighing to herself, quote-unquote, "O Lorenzo, if thou keep promise, I shall end this strife, become a Christian and thy loving wife." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 18 through 20. If e'er the Jew her father come to heaven, it will be for his gentle daughter's sake. Lorenzo, Graziano, Salerio, and Solanio prepare to help Jessica abandon her father and steal some of his wealth. In Act 2, Scene 4, we hear Lorenzo confiding his elopement plan to Graziano. Jessica has made provision, he says, quote-unquote, "how I shall take her from her father's house, what gold and jewels she is furnished with, what page's suit she hath in readiness." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 30 through 32. The plot will take advantage of the disguise made possible by Christian festivities. Bassanio, who doesn't yet know about the plot, means to hold a masked ball that night, which Lorenzo and Graziano realize will provide cover for the romantic escape Lorenzo has planned. Lorenzo is not in the least hesitant about what he is going to do or concerned for Shylock's welfare, even though the man is about to become his father-in-law. He says, quote-unquote, "If e'er the Jew her father come to heaven, it will be for his gentle daughter's sake." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 32 through 33. "Let not the sound of shallow foppery enter my sober house." A brooding Shylock prepares to head for supper with Bassanio. He instructs Jessica to keep order in his house on this night of Christian masking and reveling, but she has other plans. Here in Act 2, Scene 5, Shylock's interaction with his daughter doesn't seem cruel, which is telling since back in Act 2, Scene 1, Lancelot had spoken of Shylock with a certain contempt. Jessica's brooding father simply tells her to keep the doors shut against Christian revelers. Shylock admonishes Jessica, quote unquote, "Let not the sound of shallow foppery enter my sober house." Act 2, Scene 5, lines 34 through 35. Taking the dismissal of Lancelot as a good break, he winds up his reflections with a proverb, quote unquote, "Fast bind, fast find, a proverb never stale in thrifty mind." Act 2, Scene 5, lines 52 through 53. Shylock would prefer to remain isolated in Venice, but he will, this once, attend on them, the better, he says, quote unquote, "to feed upon the prodigal Christian, and thereby waste their substance." Act 2, Scene 5, lines 14 through 15. Shylock is determined to maintain the purity of his household, but increasingly he will be an isolated figure whose situation and attitude invite Christian characters' mockery. Tracing the intensification of that isolation is in large part the task of the play's remaining acts. And Jessica advances the process on the spot. After her father exits, she addresses him, quote unquote, "Farewell, and if my fortune be not crossed, I have a father, you a daughter, lost." Act 2, Scene 5, lines 54 through 55. Lovers cannot see the pretty follies that themselves commit. Jessica is a bit ashamed of her male disguise as a torchbearer, but escapes to Lorenzo's waiting boat below Shylock's house, taking with her some gold and jewels. In Act 2, Scene 6, Graziano makes pleasantries about how people fail to meet their love obligations. Quote unquote, "All things that are with more spirit chased than enjoyed." Act 2, Scene 6, lines 13 through 14. This observation is a setup for the weightier wrangling between Portia and Nerissa and their men later on. Jessica joins the Christians and absconds with some of Shylock's wealth. Act 2, Scene 6, lines 50 through 51. Shylock loses his daughter and money to Christian maskers. Although the play doesn't appear to be set during the time of Carnevale, Venice kept about it as part of its grand myth, a sense of liberty and temporary overturning of conventional morality. Freedom to change is the key here, and the quality to transform one's identity in a felicitous way seems to be a Christian prerogative in this play, one that Jessica wins by her willingness to abandon her Jewish father and turn Christian. Lorenzo is duly impressed, declaring that Jessica will, quote unquote, "be placed in my constant soul." Act 2, Scene 5, line 58. Antonio arrives and tells Graziano, quote unquote, "no mask tonight, the wind has come about. Bassanio presently will go aboard." Act 2, Scene 6, lines 64 through 65. Graziano plans to attend Bassanio in going to Belmont, so he must go and board Bassanio's ship. "All that glisters is not gold. Often have you heard that told. Morocco takes his chances with the caskets and incorrectly chooses gold." In Act 2, Scene 7, Morocco chooses between desert, desire, and chance, or hazard. He chooses gold, which, as he says, quote unquote, "many men desire, on the assumption that outward appearances correspond to inward qualities." Act 2, Scene 7, lines 37 through 38. He also rates himself very highly, and therefore associates himself with the most precious of the three metals on display. One gets the feeling that with Morocco, it's all about him, though to be fair, he also values Portia as equal to the same precious metal. Morocco is rewarded with crushing failure and is subject to the interdiction by Portia's father against marrying any other woman. In one act of misreading, then, he has traded his own futurity, his own family or dynastic line, for, quote-unquote, "all that glisters or glitters." Act 2, Scene 7, line 65. In any case, it was a Renaissance assumption that good is productive of still more good, while what is bad eventually exhausts itself. The underlying judgment involved in the casket contest, then, involves serious moral principles. It isn't merely a trick or a chance-driven device. The performance note on page 488 of the Norton Shakespeare reminds us that this scene ends unpleasantly, with Portia declaring, quote-unquote, "Let all of his complexion choose me so." Clearly, Portia is not attracted to this man with dark skin. Even though he is a leader among his people, and we may presume a valiant warrior, the text treats him as a figure of fun. As an aside, it should be pointed out that a great prince such as Morocco would find ways around this interdiction, having children out of wedlock and then more or less, or fully, legitimizing them with lands, responsibilities, and titles would be the main strategy. "I never heard a passion so confused, so strange, outrageous, and so variable." Solerio and Solanio compare mocking reports of Shylock's anguished outcry and demand for a search after he learns that Jessica has run away. In Act 2, Scene 8, Solerio and Solanio report on Shylock and mock his supposed babbling about Jessica and his squandered ducats. Solanio says, in full-on anti-Semitic mode, quote-unquote, "I never heard a passion so confused, so strange, outrageous, and so variable as the dog Jew did utter in the streets. My daughter, oh, my ducats, oh, my daughter." Act 2, Scene 8, lines 12 through 15. To this equivalence-making between a human being and a gold coin, they contrast the generous friendship between Antonio and Bassanio. Of Antonio, Solanio says, quote-unquote, "I think he only loves the world for him." Act 2, Scene 8, line 50. If we may hazard a conjecture about fictional psychological events, it's tempting to suppose that the loss of Jessica and many ducats and jewels is what makes Shylock truly want to execute his bond, as literally as it's written, so that when Antonio seems to be nearing financial ruin, the moneylender drives the action towards tragedy. But that thesis sinks under the weight of Jessica's own testimony. She tells Solerio, Portia, Bassanio, and others right after his successful venture with the caskets that she has heard Shylock swear to Tubal and Chus, quote-unquote, that he would rather have Antonio's flesh than 20 times the value of the sum that he did owe him. Act 3, Scene 2, lines 284 through 286. She has had no contact with her father since her elopement, so she must be talking about a time before that event. We may also surmise, though not prove, that Antonio and Bassanio may by now be apprised of Lorenzo's elopement with Shylock's daughter. Lorenzo had informed Graziano about it, and Graziano was traveling with Bassanio, so perhaps we should assume that he has informed that worthy about what is afoot. In any event, Lorenzo and his torchbearer, Jessica, were not on board Bassanio's vessel when the Venetian Duke went with Shylock to search it. Moreover, Bassanio's ship sailed earlier than planned because a favorable wind kicked up. The mask was therefore canceled, a fact of which Antonio informed Graziano at the end of Act 2, Scene 6. All of this may mean that the successful conspiracy to help Jessica make her break from her father, Shylock, is a bit larger than we might have thought. In any case, Solerio has heard that one of Antonio's ships may have been wrecked while crossing the English Channel. So the merchant will need to be given that anxiety-provoking news. "You shall look fairer ere I give or hazard. The stock Spaniard Aragon makes his choice of silver, which nets him only a picture of, quote-unquote, a blinking idiot." Meanwhile, Portia and Nerissa hear that Bassanio is approaching Belmont. In Act 2, Scene 9, the prideful, falsely self-sufficient Aragon, a stock Spanish nobleman since Spaniards were generally considered more than commonly arrogant about status, assumes silver, quote-unquote, dessert, and is rewarded not with Portia's image, but instead with the portrait of, quote-unquote, a blinking idiot. Act 2, Scene 9, lines 50 and 53. His fate is easy to predict since he treats the whole affair as purely transactional, insulting Portia by saying, quote-unquote, "You shall look fairer. Here I give or hazard." Act 2, Scene 9, line 21. We can at least say of Aragon that he gets the point about people's tendency to be taken in by fair shows. That's why he doesn't choose the golden casket, as Morocco did. The scene closes with news that Bassanio is at Belmont's gates. Morocco and Aragon will be no help to Bassanio, alas, since both had to assent to a non-disclosure agreement prior to the big contest. We find that out when Aragon says that one of the three conditions for being allowed to make his choice is, quote-unquote, "never to unfold to anyone which casket 'twas I chose." Act 2, Scene 9, lines 10 through 11. Whoever knew these great noblemen to have such scruples about lying? Oh well, Bassanio and his entourage can't simply ask the losers why they fared as they did. Bassanio will have to get it right on his own. Life is so unfair. But Nerissa solicits the aid of Cupid, so no doubt all will go well. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.